Okay, so tonight we're going to continue with the book review, which I've been doing on revolutionary psychology, and that this book was written by the founder of the modern Gnostic movement, Samael Onvior. Now, on the last show, we went through chapter 19, and that was called The Good Housemaster. And I'll just summarize briefly in case we've forgotten or maybe we weren't listening to that show. And this chapter was dealing with the difficulties of living a spiritual life and engaging with the world. So we might feel that we can only do one or the other, like we can only live spiritually if we completely lock ourselves away from the world, or alternatively, we can only live and work and have family and not have the other inner introspective life. And just as a reminder that this the teachings of the Gnostic school is what's called a fourth way school, in that we need the circumstances of life. Life is our gymnasium. Life shows us the aspects of ourselves that we wouldn't ordinarily see if we were just sitting at home or in a monastery away from life and society. It shows us what we have in our subconscious, so it brings things up. Our interactions with people do this all the time, as we're probably very familiar. So it also dealt with the isolation that, to an extent, we start to develop very naturally because we are learning to go inside of ourselves to be introspective, and so that might mean we don't do the same activities that we used to. We don't engage out in parties and go out at night every weekend like we might used to, just because, not that it's bad, just because it's not fruitful for our own inner work and our own self-realization. And then after a while of this introspection, isolation, we are then ready to go out into the world and to learn how to do the work and be in the world. And this following chapter goes more into to that, those two different worlds. So just to summarize, to finish summarizing the last chapter, the good housemaster is one that can do both. They can fulfill their duties and obligations and go to work and have their family, but still to make that time and space to do the practices. And it's hard to do both, I'll admit. It takes a lot of discipline and constant practice, or consistent practice, but it's possible. And so that's what we are aiming to do. So tonight's chapter is called The Two Worlds. And this chapter goes into explaining these worlds and describes life when we're on this path of awakening, because it's a different path to the normal path, you could say. So we have the external world that we all understand and know, and we observe this world with our five senses. So our sense of sight, of hearing, of taste, of touch and smell. So they're the normal five physical senses. And we know we have more inner senses, but we won't go into that at the moment. Then in our internal world, it's what is going on inside of us whilst we're living in the external world. So as we can see, it's a very distinct difference. We could say that the external world we are observing. With our inner world, we are self-observing. And ideally, we're doing both at the same time. And this requires a lot of practice and a lot of skill, but we develop that with the work that we do. So this sense of self-observing is actually said to be a faculty that we develop. And it's the faculty of our inner consciousness, or that part of us that is awake, to observe the parts of ourselves that are completely unconscious or asleep. So it's to observe all those behaviors that we do in our day-to-day life that we don't really know about, we don't understand, we don't comprehend, but we live the consequences of how we act in our unconscious way. So ideally, we want to become conscious of the parts of ourselves that are unconscious. So when we are observing life externally through the senses, our attention is directed outwards towards the internal world. But in self-observation, these senses of the external world are essentially useless. I mean, they're not useless in the sense that they cause us to react in a certain way. But in understanding that reaction, we don't necessarily need to understand completely the external sensations we are experiencing. But hopefully I explain that better throughout the rest of this talk. So these two types of observation takes us in two completely different directions. So we can still be engaging in life and receiving the impressions through the senses, yet at the same time to still be focusing on what's going on inside. For example, if we are driving to work and we're listening to the radio, we're watching the road, we might be drinking a takeaway coffee, and then someone cuts into our lane without them indicating and without looking, and we're forced to brake to allow for this person to come in. So whilst all this is happening, the aim is to observe our reaction to this event. And this is the self-observation. So how did we feel before this event? How did we feel during? And how did we feel afterwards? So generally, we might not know how we felt before, but we may be able to catch how it is that we feel during. We're probably going to be feeling angry, frustrated. We're probably going to be complaining in our mind that that person just drove very dangerously, didn't look what they were doing, you know, shouldn't have a license, should be off the road. And this is what is going on inside of us. And then how long do we feel that way? Does that event impact the rest of our day? Or do we calm down and continue driving and then get to work or wherever it is that we're going and start afresh? So all of these things we want to observe in ourselves. So in this respect, the external event has its role in stimulating our reactions, but instead of putting all that emphasis on, you could say, judging the other person and their dangerous behavior, drive on the road, we have more of the focus on how it is that we feel and understanding that. And when we are able to do that, then the actual person that has stimulated that reaction comes second, is not as important. And the more we do this, the better we get at that, because then we start to take more importance in what's going on inside of ourselves. And to be able to do this effectively, it does help to have a baseline state of being. So if we can start the day with a meditation practice or with a state of being that we know and we develop, then whenever we deviate from that, we will become conscious of it. And then we hope to return to that baseline state of awareness or of being. So it can be difficult to be aware of what's going on outside of us whilst what's going on inside of us. And so, yeah, it can be difficult, but it's not impossible. And it's completely necessary for this inner development and awakening. It's really essential for observing ourselves and what's going on there. So a scientist is someone that spends their whole life observing phenomena in the external world. They grow cells in petri dishes, they monitor their growth, they do experiments, they run these cells through different machines and, you know, gather their data. Likewise, an astronomer spends their time exploring the phenomena of outer space with the intent of learning more about life. So the spiritual person or a seeker of knowledge who may not label themselves as spiritual, we could also call them a scientist, because they're seeking that same knowledge that the material scientists are seeking, but looks no further than within themselves to find it. So the type of knowledge that transforms us internally can never be achieved through external observation. So we can be hypersensitive and hyper aware of what's going on outside of us, be very observant and, you know what's going on and what's around us, you know, much like I imagine a spy would be very aware. But it doesn't mean that we know what's going on inside of us. In fact, the more observant we are of what's going on outside of us, probably the less observant we are of what's going on inside of us, because all our attention is there to be conscious of our environment. And being conscious of environment isn't a bad thing, because then we're really living in the moment, right? But we still need to have an awareness of what's going on inside at the same time. So it takes a bit of practice, but that's what we aim to do. So this knowledge, true knowledge, that can really change us is based totally in what we observe in ourselves. So using the scientist again, we need to be like a scientist and observe ourselves as we would observe anything in life, to make ourselves into a study. Without becoming self-obsessed, of course, which can be tricky to do when we're really trying to observe what's going on. But yeah, just to see ourselves as an experiment, and, you know, not to be too alarmed with what we see inside of us, just to see it scientifically. So observation is a way to modify the mechanical conditions of the world, yet self-observation is a way to intimately change. So that's directly from the book. So what this is saying is that through science and scientific research, or materialistic science, we can have a great understanding of life, and this allows us to create new inventions, perhaps new drugs, new things, and new knowledge to be able to live better and modify our lives. But to make a change in our lives, we need to observe what we are in order to change. And as we're such holistic creatures, any type of inner change is going to have effects on our health and well-being in a complete way. So if we understand how our emotions are, we will understand how the emotions affect our posture, and therefore how well we're able to breathe, and this is going to affect our health. So subtle things like that. Also, how we're thinking. If we're thinking negatively all the time, then how that affects our emotions, how it affects our posture, and again, how it affects our health and well-being. So everything that we observe in ourselves is going to help us understand how we are and how we can change for the better. Okay, so we'll just take a short music break. And I've chosen a track called Journey into Space by Terry Oldfield. That's the CD. And the track is called Dancer in the Void. So we'll be back in a short while. So you're back on the Gnostic Waves. That was a track called Dancer in the Void by Terry Oldfield. And I'm talking on the topic of revolutionary psychology, well, that is the book review, on the chapter called The Two Worlds. And I will continue on. So in the book it says two types of knowledge exist, the external and the internal. If we don't have magnetic center that can differentiate between these two, then confusion is the outcome. So really, for this magnetic center to know this magnetic center, we need to meditate daily and establish what is called the work memory. And this memory is the accumulation of all the work we've done, all the realizations that we've had about what is going on inside of us, the parts of us that are awake, the parts of us that are asleep. And so with that work memory, it forms that center within us. So then we start to understand the difference between the knowledge or information that we receive from outside of ourselves, from other people, from television, from books, from friends, and that information that we have realized inside of us. Now, sometimes people might point out things, like friends might point out how we are, if we have an honest relationship and we can take it. But we still need to look inside of ourselves and see what it is that they are pointing out to us, and then make that an inner knowledge, an inner awakening. So yeah, all this helps when we do consistent and constant practice in the form of meditation and inner reflection. So in the book it says, pseudo-esoteric doctrines belong to the field of the external, even though they are accepted as internal knowledge. So what Samael and Viola is saying is that there's lots of schools out there that might teach about the internal knowledge, but really it's just about the external information. So when something just stays in the realm of the intellect, then we're not going to be going deeper, because we need to go deeper into real emotional aspect and what's going on inside of us. So in this work, we try and go to that depth in the process of awakening. So the examples of what happens in our internal world: we have thoughts, we have ideas, emotions, we have longings, hopes, disappointments, and these are generally what's going on inside of us and are invisible to the ordinary, common and current senses. So we can be feeling these things, and people that know us might be able to sense that, but generally we're the ones that are feeling them and can hide them from the world if we wish. Now, these things going on inside of us are more real to us than the dining table or the living room couch. And this is really a powerful statement, and I hope that we can accept this, is that we might think the things that we touch in the world are more real than what's going on inside of us, but those things inside of us have more of an impact on our reality and how we live our life than the positioning of the furniture in our room. And so if we can understand this, then we're definitely on the path to awakening, because we understand the power of what is going on within. We live in our internal world more than we do in our external world. So in our internal world, in secret, we love, desire, suspect, bless, curse, yearn, suffer, enjoy, are disappointed. We might feel anxious, confused, depressed, and anything else that comes up. I thought it's interesting to note that they say 1 in 5 people are said to suffer from a mental illness. And it's really interesting to reflect on that, because we can go out into the street, into the world, and look at people and watch them and see how they are, and they might look fine. So everyone looks fine to us. But this is because we don't know what's going on in their inner worlds. We don't know what they're going through, if they're suffering. I mean, sometimes you can read it on their face, but not all the time, because we distract ourselves in such a way that we don't even really know what's going on in us, inside ourselves, until it builds and builds and builds, and then we have a breakdown and we can no longer keep it together. And so it's better not to wait till we have that breakdown, but to be able to see these things before then. So yeah, we don't really know what inner struggles people go through. We don't know who those 1 in 5 people are that are suffering inside of themselves and don't really know a way out of it. And this is mainly because we have a personality, and this personality is like the facade that we have and how we represent ourselves to the world. And if we have a lot of the ego of vanity, then we're going to be hiding what is going on inside of ourselves so that we feel that people can accept us. And I think there's a fair amount of vanity that tries to show a face that is different to what we are. And sometimes it can be helpful if we're feeling down all the time and we really want to try and feel better, then we can try and put on a happy face and smile more in the event that it's going to help us to overcome these inner struggles. But we also have to be conscious of what they are and if possible, why we feel that way. Were there any events in our life that where we started to feel that, and to really dig deep, to be able to awaken and to know how to help ourselves or how to get help. So I think it's always good to not assume that people are as they appear to be. If we're ever worried that someone is struggling, to just always check how they're going, but not in a intrusive way. Just be, you know, check up on them if we can, send a message. And this can be tough in this day and age because so many people suffer and it's hard to be able to isolate everyone. But, you know, we do as best we can. I think the take-home message is not to assume that everyone is always going to be okay. People go through difficult times. Everyone, it's not as if we all go through difficult times at the same time, but everyone at some stage or another goes through a difficult point. And the more we understand this or go through these ourselves, the more we can relate to other people. So if we haven't gone through a difficult time, we might not be able to know how to help or be there for someone. But we can just do what it is that we can in our capacity. So I wanted to move on to another point, which was based on the teaching of man, know thyself and you'll know the universe and the gods. And this is interesting because if we want to know and experience the inner realities of the phenomena that exist in life, or the inner world of the planet Earth or any of the other planets in our solar system, then we must previously know our own inner universe. So as we have an inner reality, planets and other phenomena also have an inner reality. So we may have heard of the seven cosmo creators or seven archangels that govern the organizing principle of our solar system. So we have Michael and the sun, Raphael, Mercury, Gabriel, the moon, Samael, the Mars, Orifiel, Saturn, Zachariel, Jupiter, and the last one is Uriel from Venus. So we can understand these forces and influences of these planets in the internal worlds if we understand and know how to connect with the inner realities of things. And the best way to do this is when we start to understand that we have our own inner reality, our own inner country that so much goes on in, and that we can experience so much through our inner reality. So as children, we learn how to crawl, and then we learn how to walk, and then we learn how to get around to different places. We learn how to drive and really learn how to maneuver ourselves in life. And it's the same in our inner worlds. So through meditation, introspection, and the psychological self-observation, we learn to walk and to navigate through the inner worlds. And we start to explore this through self-observation. And the sense of self-observation, I mentioned this at the start, is something that has atrophied in us. But we can, with practice, re-establish this sense. So we might start by doing a lot of self-analysis and a lot of thinking about what we're doing and how we are. But This is different to observing ourselves as we are. So we can observe ourselves from a third party and see how it is that we are and how it is that we act. And this, as I said, is a sense, and because we haven't used it in a long time, we need to re-establish its use and its role in our lives. Then the more we explore our inner world, the more we realize the difference between what we observe externally and what we observe internally. And that's when we can really start to make a change in our lives. This is what we're aiming to do in these teachings. So, on that note, we'll take another short music break. And I've chosen another track from the CD Journey into Space by Terry Oldfield called Be Still, which is very appropriate because we will soon enter into a meditation practice. So we're back on the Gnostic Waves. That was a track called Be Still. And now we're going to enter into the meditation practice of tonight's show. So getting ourselves ready and comfortable in the position we plan to hold, whether it's sitting in the chair, lying down, sitting cross-legged on a stool. Standing up even. Bringing ourselves into the moment. Enjoying the process of breathing, taking a few deep breaths in. Imagine that fresh oxygen going into all the cells of the body. With each exhalation, we imagine all the tensions of the day being released. Tensions we might feel inside, whether they're physical or emotional or mental, and breathing through this tension. And then exhaling as much as we can on the out breath. First part of the practice of relaxation, trying to be as present as we can be, as serene as we can be, without our mind trying to jump to the future. Being present and being happy, or at least serene. short while, we're going to work with the mantra E, which is the vowel for working with the third eye. So before we start with the mantra, let's focus our attention in that area, the third eye between the eyes, two eyes and more inside. And then after the next breath, we can start. And resting. Re-establish a sense of relaxation and concentration in the third eye. And continuing again with the mantras, another three times. And now a final three times mantra E. E. So now we're going to do a reflection or a retrospection. To imagine these two worlds that we talked about in tonight's show. What we want to do is try and find an event in our life, a recurring event that gives us problems. First, we want to bring to our attention the environment. It could be the workplace, it could be the family home, could be in transit from one place to another. Understanding the stimuli, the people present, so essentially understanding the external component, the external impressions. And then once we've established that and we can imagine that in the mind's eye, we work to observe what is going on inside of us. So this includes any emotions that we feel, how we are standing, or how our posture is, what we're doing, and also what's going on in the mind. What's the inner words we're using, and also what is that we're saying? Are we responding in any given way, or are we just internalizing everything and imploding inside? Trying to be aware of our reactions. Are we reacting with self-compassion? Do we feel we're a victim? Do we feel anger? Do we feel fear? Do we feel hurt, attacked, criticized? Understanding what's going on within us. And if we can clearly observe what's going on within us, we can ask ourselves, why? Why do we feel this way? Why do we feel hurt? Why do we feel criticized? Attacked? What is it that we want or wanted that wasn't being given or granted? These are the things we need to understand on the very deepest level. If we want to free ourselves from these negative events in our lives. The more we can understand how we react and why we react, the greater our capacity to transform those reactions and transform those circumstances. from the inside out, as opposed to changing things from outside and in. And to realize the power that we have within ourselves to do this. Not feeling powerless, not feeling victimized by life, by circumstances in life, by people in life. Take some effort, some maturity to look at ourselves objectively, but the reward is limitless. The reward is happiness. The reward is freedom. The more we can observe and comprehend our own reactions to life, create that center of gravity within ourselves, and the more force we have to change, to make a difference in our own lives, to take responsibility. If we are able to identify that desire that we are seeking from that person, from that circumstance, we can ask ourselves, is it worth suffering for? If not, then we can work to let go. If it's important to us, then we can find our own way of achieving what it is we need. Independently, if that person or event is not going to help us in that way, that it's okay. It's their decision. We each have our lives to live, and we can work towards gaining what that is that we need in another way. So just some things to reflect on there. So that brings us to the end of tonight's practice. We just focused really on the self-observation part and a bit of the comprehension of what is going on inside of us, the desires that are essentially not being fulfilled and causing us pain. We can go deeper and work with that Divine Mother to energetically dissolve those parts in us that are misguided or causing us a difficulty, but we've left it there for tonight's show. Okay, thank you again for joining me on the program. If you want any more information, head to the website gnosticwaves.com. That's Gnostic spelt G-N-O-S-T-I-C